Couldn't the Nazis do it?
I didn't get this, and I have to get out so I can copy.
It's time once again for Dialogue Conspiracy with political research specialist Mae Brussel, who for 5 years has shared with us her extensive research into political assassinations and abuses of power in this country. Her program relates the news of the week to emerging evidence about the conspiracy which allegedly maintains by force its control over the legislative, executive, and judicial processes in America. And now, Mae Brussel.
Good afternoon. This is Mae Brussel in Carmel, California. It's Valentine's Day, February the 14th, 1977, and this is Dialogue Conspiracy number 256. I get mail at my home address and sometimes at the station here if you have any questions that you want me to answer that are reasonable enough to put into an envelope. Send a self-addressed stamped envelope. My address is listed in the telephone book in Carmel, California. And please address it to yourself so I don't have to spend time answering. I'm way behind my mail as it is. I did get one letter about 2 weeks ago, I believe it was from Salinas, asking me for information on the subject of mind control and the role of the government. Now, that kind of question is impossible to answer in a letter. Those of you that listen to the tapes every week get various references to the use of mind control by the government, and I have done many shows on it and will continue to do it in the future, but as I say, it's impossible to put this in a letter. There are various aspects of mind control that the Army, intelligence, the CIA, and the FBI use, such as chemical controls, surgical controls, hypnotic trances, the uses of drugs, a combination of electrode implants in the brains, and LSD. And LSD combined with about 26 different chemicals. I have documents from the Pentagon verifying these combinations that are used surreptitiously without warning to people at large to affect their behavior. There's tests by the government that have been taking place since 1954 up to the present day. There's the problem of the distribution of the chemicals, the drugs, and the doctors that do this kind of work for the government. And then there's the control of the media, newspapers, TV, and radio, the brainwashing processes through cinema and movies, specific doctors at certain hospitals at UCLA, Boston Hospital, up at Vacaville and Oakland, California. I have the names of various doctors, so it's impossible to go into the doctors, the hospitals, the methods, and I can't answer that letter personally. I don't have just one show, a tape to send on mind control, so I will answer on the air and say that if you just keep listening from time to time, we will be mentioning various aspects of mind control, but I just can't answer that kind of letter in the mail. But if it's a specific piece of information or fact or the name of a book that I've mentioned too quickly on the air that you want to order, I can answer those kinds of letters. I did get some mail from a Danbury Press, and I thought I would share it with you because it looks interesting. In Danbury, Connecticut, the zip code is 06816. The Danbury Press is putting out an encyclopedia, if you would believe it, on espionage. And this is the first time that I've seen such an encyclopedia, and it looks rather interesting. They have about 20 volumes. You can order them. They come out every 3 weeks, 3 to 6 weeks. And the issues, the first one is called The Making of a Spy. They go in this order, the smuggling business, codes and ciphers, tools and techniques, traitors and defectors, undercover cops, resistance heroes of World War II, the corporation spies, the second oldest profession, discreet networks of power, spies and martyrs, royal intrigues, anarchy and autocrats, gentlemen spies, the secret war from 1912 to 1918, the undercover war from 1939 to 1946, internal surveillance, terrorism and counterterrorism, superpower spies, and an index. I will be ordering this set of encyclopedias, and I think that as they arrive, I will review them on the air in case you want to buy them or get information about them, or maybe ask your library to carry them. If you want information in the folder, it's intriguing. Write to Danbury Press, Sherman Turnpike, Danbury, Connecticut. The little brochure goes into who are the spies. It says nearly 4 million of them are at work right now. How they are selected. It tells how they follow your sons and daughters on large campuses to select them. how they are trained, 70 out of every 1,000 that are selected are used, what they do, what tools they use, their language. And it has dictionary of language like sanctification, means that you'll discover or be blackmailed, to sanctify somebody is to blackmail them. A stable is a bunch of women who will set up sex traps for sanctification. They set up a stable. A sister is a member of the CIA stable. It's interesting what they think of the women. A group of women that are set up to blackmail is a stable. And a sister is one of the women from the stable. In Moscow, the sisters are called swallows. And this brochure goes into, as I said, the undercover war, the British double cross system, and famous spies. And it goes into United States and KGB and FBI intelligence, and a very good index on spying and how to recognize spies and how they behave in their language and the way they wheel and deal and the kinds of equipment they wear. There's pictures of their equipment and the way they operate in smuggling with painting and silver, drugs and gold, and how their code system works. And it looks very interesting, and it's about time that an encyclopedia come out about it. Just one book alone wouldn't be enough. There are many books on spying, but these are 20 volumes, and they'll be coming out every 6 weeks. And I will order them and let you know when the first one comes, and we'll see what it looks like. There were a few articles in the newspaper this week that were of interest. There were about 20 or 30, as a matter of fact, but I just brought in five or six that were particularly interesting to mention briefly. One was the murder of Frank Bompensiero. He was called the Bump, a mafia chieftain in San Diego. He's 71 years old. And he was shot to death this last week. And he had been an informant for the FBI for 10 years. And I think his death is important. He was killed with a silencer, four bullets, .22 caliber bullets, identical to the way Sam Giancana was murdered in Chicago. And later, John Roselli, who was a friend of this gentleman's, if you call him a gentleman, Frank Bompensiero, John Roselli was a friend of his, and Jimmy Fratriano, and he had close links in California organized crime. But he's another member of the crime syndicate who worked with the Federal Intelligence Agency, FBI, for 10 years, who was killed. So Sam Giancana worked with the FBI and CIA, John Roselli did, and then this, so did Jimmy Hoffa, and now this Frank has been bumped off. His nickname was the Bump, and he was killed by the same kind of weapon, the same kind of gun that killed Sam Giancana, and it was described before as a CIA type of weapon, a silencer fitted with .22. Giancana was killed in Chicago with the same type of weapon, and another woman, Tamara Rand, a mystery businesswoman, was killed in San Diego in November 75, and she worked with Sam Giancana and this gang. And it seems that agents of the Central Intelligence Agency and FBI who worked in organized crime are being killed. And I believe that as conspiracies begin to unfold, with these particular people dead and probably killed by the intelligence community, then the blame for many of the conspiracies can always fall back on them once they're dead. It's been a year since Saul Mineo was killed, and there's an appeal in Los Angeles. A close friend of his, a radio announcer by the name of Mr. Mintz, Elliot Mintz, has been asking for evidence on that case. And I've said before in KLRB, I believe it was linked to the murder of Bobby Hall. The night that Saul Mineo was killed, Bobby Hall was trailing him and knew where he was. Bobby Hall worked for the Los Angeles Police Department, for Howard Hughes, and for the Beverly Hills Police. And Mineo was about to star in a movie as the lead role of Sirhan Sirhan at the time that Saul Mineo was killed. It's been just a year. There's no clues, and I believe the LAPD and Sheriff Peter Pitches in LA are sitting on that story. A group of people back east asked from the Freedom of Information Act for some more papers on the role of the Central Intelligence Agency in the John Kennedy assassination. And according to the Associated Press this week, a new report came out, in addition to an earlier one that came out about Lyndon Johnson spying on researchers of the Warren Report. And this is a new report on the Central Intelligence Agency. And they directed their offices around the world in 1967 to employ propaganda to counter all doubts raised by critics of the Warren Commission. The propaganda campaign was waged by passing some unclassified documents and information about the assassination to people who had access to the news media, and they would review books and feature articles and make fun of and attack the critics of the Warren Report. The document said the aim was to provide material to counter and discredit all conspiracy theorists. And what they were supposed to do, the CIA leaked out information, what they were supposed to do was to say that the critics were wedded to their theories, that they only got these theories before the evidence was in, that they were politically interested and had a selfish motive, that they were financially interested in making a profit off the assassination, that their work was hasty and inaccurate and did not stand up to time, and that they were infatuated with their own theories. The CIA dispatched to its CIA chiefs certain orders to the various stations and bases that said books were coming out criticizing the Warren Commission's findings and that it was a cause of concern to the U.S. government, including our organization, meaning the CIA. Furthermore, they said there's a hint that President Johnson himself is one person who might have benefited or was in some way responsible for the assassination of John Kennedy. And the innuendo of such seriousness of these charges demanded, the memo went on, that the reputation of the American government be protected, and in so doing, the CIA should publish propaganda against the researchers. Now, it's highly illegal for the CIA to be working domestically in the United States. This did not involve criticism of people overseas, and the news media was flooded with books. It still is, and flooded with articles to discredit the researchers and stop the investigation of the assassinations. And this kind of false story about various researchers continues right up to the present day and divides all the researchers in half with rumors and allegations. And I'll go into the detail of the result of one of these episodes. But this memo is now available that shows the concerted effort of the CIA, a government agent, to come down on persons like myself and other researchers who were doing what we thought was our absolute obligation to do, to expose these murderers and point the finger of guilt to those people who killed John Kennedy, who are still out free today and who will not take responsibility for killing the President of the United States. Martin Luther King was killed by a conspiracy, and just yesterday on national television, Attorney General Griffin Bell did say that the Justice Department came out with an investigation which did not rule out the possibility that there was a conspiracy to kill Martin Luther King. And just last week, the FBI had press releases, a press conference. They got not national attention, claiming that they had personally investigated the assassination of Martin Luther King and there was no conspiracy. The same agency that's been charged with being part of the conspiracy gave themselves a whitewash on the matter, and yet the Attorney General came out 1 week later and said that he's seen the report, which incidentally is not available for anybody yet. And he said, I think if you read the report, you could lean to either side. You could say there's no evidence of a conspiracy, or you could still wonder if there was a conspiracy. And he said, I want to release the report. I want everyone to be able to read the report and make up their own mind. We'd like to have answers, he says, to two or three more questions. I haven't seen the report yet, but I'm sure there's about 100 questions I'd like to ask, and maybe the report will be available. It hasn't been available yet. Another near collapse is taking place in Washington, D.C., that I may go into at length, and that has to do with the assassination committee back there, and we've talked about that at great length on Dialogue Conspiracy. Richard Sprague is the director of the House of Representatives Committee to investigate the assassination of John Kennedy and Martin Luther King. Since we were here last week together at Dialogue Conspiracy, Richard Sprague was fired by Representative Henry Gonzalez, a congressman from Texas, who told him to be out of the office by 5 o'clock, and his top aides were fired, too. 4 investigators from the staff and Richard Sprague were fired, and Richard Sprague counteracted and said he won't quit. He's going to stay on with the committee. The articles coming out of Washington, D.C., the Associated Press, the United Press, read something like this. This is the headline article from the Salt Lake Tribune. Probe of assassinations near collapse? And it goes into the infighting now of Richard Sprague, who was an assistant district attorney from Philadelphia, brought to Washington, D.C. to open up the investigation of John Kennedy and Martin Luther King. and the fight between he and Congressman Gonzalez, and it looks like the committee's going to die. Now, on the one hand, the Attorney General is saying very clearly that it seems there was a conspiracy, that he admits the possibility there was a conspiracy to kill Martin Luther King. And the same time that the Attorney General is saying that, the committee to investigate the Martin Luther King assassination is folding up because of the infighting between the counsel and the congressman who had the committee. Congressman Dodd, Representative Christopher Dodd from Hartford, Connecticut, had a statement in the paper, and he said, if the committee dies, Dodd said, we'll probably see a whole new series of conspiracy books come forward which will try to establish that the committee fell apart because of another conspiracy. What Congressman Christopher Dodd doesn't know is that I've said all along there was a conspiracy inside that committee, inside of the offices and with the staff to sabotage the investigation. And one reason I stayed an arm's distance from that committee in every sense is that I knew it would fall flat on its face and discredit the investigators along with it. They've stayed far from me because they didn't want the amount of truth that I had to tell. And I have been discrediting them or trying to on various telephone radio talks or from KLRB. The committee is falling apart, and I've talked to people very close to Representative Dodd in Hartford, Connecticut. I was back there this fall. I told them why the committee would fail, and it is failing, and I gave an outline of a minimum it would take to get it really going and started, which they didn't intend to do. And then the cover-up now is that, a lot of people will write books and come forward and say this was a conspiracy, which is our right to do if it was a conspiracy, and there has been a concerted effort to sabotage the truth of these assassinations. As the truth gets more open, as more people heard there was a committee in Washington and sent in a lot of material, enough to flood them and keep them going for 2 or 3 or 4 years, then the powers that be, the CIA and the FBI, had to crack down and put pressure and cause an infight between Richard Sprague and Henry Gonzalez, which is not operable now. There's no way they can work and continue as a team. And I don't know whether Mr. Sprague's going to stay on for nothing and not be paid or walk out or how it's going to go. But right now it's at a standstill. And the committee to investigate the murder of John Kennedy and Martin Luther King stands at an absolute standstill and is collapsing from infighting, which is typical of the FBI COINTEL program. It's the thing that I tried to explain to the other researchers, how people get divided, this divide and conquer, and they do not accept that the COINTEL still exists, and therefore they fall victim to the consequences of not believing that it still is happening in the United States. Well, something happened this last week that was very important to me, and I think it's important to you to talk about on Dialogue Conspiracy. I've talked at great length the last few weeks on Jimmy Carter and the ITT connections and the connections to the Rockefellers, the Council of Foreign Relations, the Bilderbergers, the Trilateral Committee. I call that the far right wing of American capitalism or multinational control and multinational conspiracy. But there's a conspiracy that infiltrates the left as well as the right, and I want to talk about that today and share some feelings with you about what happened in New York City. There's a radio station in New York City called WBAI. It's part of the Pacifica radio station. They have KPFA in Berkeley, KPFK in Los Angeles. They have a station in Houston, Texas, and this week they were supposed to open WPFW in Washington, D.C. It took 7 years to get permission to get this station going, and they wanted to have it. And WBAI passed themselves off as an alternative news service, an alternative FM radio station. They were the voice of dissent through the 60s, through the anti-war movement, through the drug scenes and the Timothy Leary scene. They supported the marijuana initiatives, the grass demonstrations, smoking out in the parks, and they gave credibility to people that I call street theater, like Jerry Rubin, Abby Hoffman, Timothy Leary, Tom Hayden, and that group. And the WBAI is probably the largest FM radio station in the United States and has a large audience in New York City. And the man known there as the disc jockey, who has had these various personalities of the new left, so to speak, Bob Fass, has been on there. I don't know how many years WBAI has been on the air, 15 years. And Bob had a show called Radio Unmentionable. It's a talk show every Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday night from 12 at night till 5 in the morning. And when I first met Bob Fast through Dialogue Conspiracy and through my articles I published in The Realist, people out here who came from New York were always surprised that I knew Bob, that I was on the show, and he was calling out here all the time. And we didn't meet personally until January 75 in Boston at a conspiracy conference. And at that time, WBIA taped the entire conference, and they played the sections, the lectures that I gave, and I built up a large listening audience in New York City, giving them the kind of information I share out here on the West Coast, and some facts related to the assassinations and going beyond John Kennedy into things like the various flus and chemical poisonings of the SLA or the Howard Hughes hoax. And in May of 1975, a year and a half ago, there was a conference in New York City at the New York University. Mark Lane said that he would not appear with Mae Bressel at any conspiracy conference because I talked about mind control and other areas besides Lee Harvey Oswald as being part of a package conspiracy, even getting into the germ conspiracies and things like the air conditioning pipes in Florida that later were used at the Legionnaire disease in Pennsylvania. And the WBAI was outraged that Mark Lane took this stance, and the Elgin Theater was offered for me to lecture. And I went back to New York three times and talked at the Elgin, and then BAI started to play a Dialogue Conspiracy in New York City. And I built up a tremendous listening audience across the country, thousands of miles away in New York City, on WBAI. When I got into the area of the SLA being the CIA or Howard Hughes being buried in 1971, or I talked about the controversial I.F. Stone and his position of silence regarding all these various assassinations, the sledgehammer came down, and there seemed to be orders not to have Mae Bressel on WBAI any longer. And this was supposed to be a listener-sponsored station, and Alex Coburn, he pronounces his name, from Village Voice wrote an article in the Village Voice called Up the Maypole, in which he criticized them for wanting to raise money and yet allowing me to be on the air, which is really taking away from the people in New York City who had built up a large group that got to know each other, and I had a loyal following there, and the Village Voice did not want the information that I had to say or the facts on the SLA and the CIA or Howard Hughes on New York radio, and they didn't want me at the Elgin Theater with such a large following. People like Leonard Wineglass went to Bob Fast and said I was hurting the defense fund for Emily Harris of the SLA to link them to intelligence community or the domestic Phoenix operation. Well, Bob Fast took orders and told the listeners they needed money. They were up against the wall. They needed about $200,000 to stay on the air last Christmas. But when they put themselves on the air and asked for money and took calls, every call or every other call was, where is Mae Bressel? Why should we give you money? You're suppressing the news and the information. We're not getting the facts. And every time they went on the air with talk shows, Bob's show had been on for 15 years. He couldn't conduct a talk show anymore because the enthusiasm of the movement got so great back there that people began to shove them off the air, and there was a Mr. Gorman there that kept attacking me in New York, and finally Gorman couldn't stand on the air. He would get telephone calls about Mae Bressel. And then the listening audience began to call in, why are you suppressing this information? And another woman called in, where are you getting your dope? Are you a bunch of dopers? Are you dope dealers? And somebody else called in and said, we found out BAI is funded by the Ford Foundation. And then other people called in and asked, who are the board of directors? Who runs Pacifica? And are you actually the CIA? And every time they got on the radio, Malachi McCourt on Sunday night took Bob Fast's place, and Bob started to get off the air except one or two nights a week. And there was a Miss Costello and this Paul Gorman. They began to be harassed by so many calls that it was difficult to conduct the radio station as a talk show format. They just couldn't conduct it anymore, and that was one of their fortes that they used to do, and they used to do quite well. Mark Lane got on the air one night, and he began to attack me, and I accused him of keeping his research at the Grassy Knoll area, where this country is really falling apart with its mind control and pollution and increased SWAT teams for food riots and going into domestic counterintelligence. And I accused him of stalemating the investigations in Washington, and he accused me of holding them back by naming the people that were involved. He said naming the people that were involved set the investigation back 20 years, and I claimed that staying at the grassy knoll with Mrs. Helen Markham and a few witnesses held the investigation back 13 years. That what he had to offer is what he offered 13 years ago, and nothing new had come out from Mark Lane in 13 years that would make any difference to the committee in Washington, which is proving true right now as the committee falls apart. He's very much detached from it, and I understand he was in L.A. last weekend. Well, they were on the air, they were getting attacks, and a new station manager was brought in, and I did not talk to her, Anna Kossoff, and another researcher, Ted Gandolfo, began to call BAI. He lived in New York, he moved to California, went back there, and he wanted to give them information about the investigation in Congress, information about the Rules Committee, the suppression of the investigation of John Kennedy. He would call in to defend my research. He told the people there to support their suspicions of the people curtailing my information, that he had been to my house, he had been to Carmel, had seen the research, that Mark Lane wasn't right in his analysis. He hadn't even seen the documents, which I possess. And Ted Gandolfo also began to call in, and a large number of very good friends began to flood BAI with calls. The result was that they had to stop their talk shows. They had to go off there, which means they couldn't take calls even for fundraising, and they were reduced to either playing their songs of the 16th century Baroque music or rock music or whatever. But the talk part of BAI fell apart. And the important thing is that this was not CBS or NBC or American Broadcasting. This was Radio America. This was supposed to be a listener-sponsored station. It was supposed to be the liberal station. It was supposed to be the station where you could air truths and share documentation of conspiracy, but they got caught. And the result was that Anna Kossoff, the manager, had to fire seven people from BAI this last Friday. And as a result, 7 or 10 more resigned. And their transmission towers are on 62nd Street in New York, right next to Lexington. And the main building that they had was barricaded. The doors were practically broken down. The police were there, and the transmission studios weren't working. And the wires were cut, and instead of going off the air, a group of people went to the 81st floor of the Empire State Building, where it seems there were alternative towers, and they stayed on the air for a while, and they tried to explain to the people what was happening. There was this strike. There were these mass firings. And then after 15 years of radio, WBAI, at least as of now, since Friday, has been off the air. I did hear my telephone was held up to the radio station in New York as they were still trying to conduct a program, but they did go off the air Friday. It was 15 years of radio, and they went off the air. And I think there's a lot to learn by this. I don't care if they ever go back on the air. If they're free radio, if they have free speech, if they can prove something in my documentation or research that's in error, they have a right to ask me to apologize or produce the documents upon which I base my shows. But for somebody to come in and take orders to just take her off the air and not give a legitimate reason or give an irrational reason is not enough when a station is pretending to do the liberal scene. And I was sitting home Friday sewing blouses and Valentine gifts for my daughters, and very happily sewing, and there was this siege on 62nd Street and at the Empire State Building. I'd have one ear to the phone, and the phone was ringing continuously, and I was sitting peacefully in Carmel and thinking of the difference of a station like KLRB, where I've come in here for 5.5 years, and there's absolutely no hassle, and they don't pretend to be liberal or left or political in any sense. They'll carry any kind of news, and they'll carry all kinds of news, and they allow me to share my research with them every week and with you without having any one kind of image. There's been no curtailment of news or documentation or information. But on a station like New York, WBAI, that pretended to have an image, what happened, in essence, was when their image was blown and they actually censored information coming over, whether it had to do with the burial of Howard Hughes, the falsification of evidence or identification of his fingerprints, and hitting at the core of the conspiracies in this country in the Rockefeller Summa Corporation combines, when I hit at the creation of the SLA as a tyranny from the right, formed by the right wing to get more police and more suppression and fear and believe that radicals were taking over this country, When we talked that kind of talk, that wasn't allowed. And that reminds me of an article that I want to share with you in conjunction to this because of the irony of the situation that came out in The Realist. Paul Krasner, who published my three articles in The Realist, the SLA is the CIA, and my Martha Mitchell, why was Martha Mitchell kidnapped, and the Senate Select Committee is part of the cover-up. I did those three for The Realist, but before I knew Paul Krasner, and I took The Realist for 13 years before I met him, he had an article in June 1966, that's quite a long time ago, 1966, 10 years ago, 11 years ago, by Eric Norden, and it was titled The Tender Tyranny of American Liberals. And I have a few quotations from Eric Norden's article that pertain to what happened at BII and the circumstances under which they had to fold by their own hypocrisy. Eric Norden said, "The spiritual and political bankruptcy of contemporary liberalism is more than just another evidence of American decadence. It now poses a direct and crucial challenge to the emergency of any new left as a viable political force. The record of liberalism has been a pathetic one, such as Adlai Stevenson's impotent exhibition of deceit at the United Nations." This is at the time of the Bay of Pigs invasion in Cuba. "Today," Eric Norden said, "when there is at least the possibility of mobilizing a genuine new left, radicals must face the fact that liberalism is going to be their enemy. Liberalism itself is a synthetic creation of the power structure, a humanitarian facade behind which the dirty work of policing the world can go on uninterrupted." He didn't know or realize then that people like the Ford Foundation were actually funding WBAI. Eric Norden said the extreme right has at least a muddled apprehension of the cataclysmic revolutionary upheavals that are shaking the earth. They know what money and power bring. They know who has it and what it means to lose it. And they know how to fight and protect it or invest it. And the liberals, by and large, live out their middle-class lives in invincible ignorance, even when the storm breaks. Not halfway around the world, but in the black ghettos, just a few miles from their split-level suburban fortresses. Eric Norden went on, "The liberals have made intellectually respectable a foreign policy and a way of life from which every American of conscience should long ago have recoiled in horror. By championing little changes, they averted the big changes." I think of examples of this, such as Roots, where he champions the right to look back to where his family is, but allows the government to make chemicals to separate the lactate and milk that could kill all blacks on planet Earth within 24 hours if they want to, or the manufacturing of 25 million transponders by the intelligence community to insert into the black people their bodies to limit their mobility and their emotions by satellite. These things are made, and yet we don't hear from Mr. Alex Haley about these things. He just champions the right that you can go from a hut, from making a drum, to have your foot cut off, to becoming a millionaire. We talk about little changes, we avert big changes, he said. Eric Norden said they should have sold horror on the intellectual marketplace with the elan. They have sold horror with the elan of Madison Avenue, and they've bolstered their product with a genius for deceit. I think of the kidnapping of Patty Hearst, the decapitation of DeFreeze, Donald DeFreeze, the trial of Hurricane Carter, the Chowchilla kidnapping, and various horrors, the Olympic Games massacre, and counterintelligence from the right that's been ignored. He says they sell horror on the intellectual marketplace, even through their radio and news media, just like Madison Avenue does, and they bolster their product with a genius for deceit. After World War II, American imperialism was cloaked in liberal terms. The liberal legions control the mass communications. Escaping this deadly stranglehold, said Eric Norden, is the primary task of any radical resistance movement. It took me some time to recognize liberals as the ideological pimps of the power structure. The whole question of truth as a value in and of itself is at the heart of the liberal syndrome. This is what Eric Norden wrote in 1966 in The Realist. And yet, the liberals are unqualified relativists. The radical, once he is beyond his hipster juvenileism, must recognize that there are absolutes, that good and evil, truth and falsehood exist and can be perceived by man. And it is the liberals who are truly blind. In the world as it is, there exists a whole spectrum of colors, not just shades, of gray and a spectrum of objective truths, which it is our human responsibility to perceive and discern and act upon. I might interject here that those people in New York City that forced BII off the air for suppressing Bob Fass calling me and for suppressing Dialogue Conspiracy, there are the victims of their relativism. They could, the people that called in supported this truth, and the people that bowed down were the victims of their relativism. They thought, according to the Village Voice, that they could get more money for BAI if they obeyed the orders to take Mae Bressel off the air, but it didn't work that way. Once they took the program off, they still didn't get the money, and they all lost their jobs besides. They tried to rationalize, Bob Fass said, on the air, well, after supporting me at the Elgin Theater many times, introducing me there, for spending hours and hours on BAI, he said on the air, well, if we have me on, we'll have to have a battery of lawyers to defend us, and we can't afford it. And people called back, well, where has she ever been named in a lawsuit? In 5.5 years, she hasn't even been named in one single lawsuit. What's the basis for your statements? And they had to rationalize the reason that I couldn't be on the air. And every time they came up with a reason, they said, well, May never admits she's wrong, and she never apologized for things that are wrong. And people would call in and say, well, name one thing that was wrong. What did she say that has been disproven in her research that you want her to say she was wrong about? The liberal, according to Eric Norton, and he's right, uses relativism. It's useful to them. But he says not only does it blur the issues, it obviates the very necessity of acting upon them. When you rationalize the thing, you don't have to make a choice and act on it. And he said truth becomes then, to any person who behaves in this way, not what it is, but what is useful. The real truth of this research lies in documents. It lies in bullet holes and photographs, fingerprints, voice prints, corpses, the corpse of Lee Harvey Oswald, the corpse of Howard Hughes, various bank accounts, and canceled checks. There are objective truths. I believe, and I sincerely believe with Eric Norton, that there is good and evil, and there is truth and falsehood, and they can be perceived, and they do exist, and you can't be relative in these things. And thank goodness I have friends in New York that have believed that, and one of those researchers, I say Ted Gandolfo, has believed it, and there's been many who have called that radio station, but those people that believe in this also were the ones that forced that hypocrisy to end back there after the time period that they've been on the air. Eric Norton went on to say George Orwell confided before his death, when he wrote 1984, that his Ministry of Truth wasn't based at all on Adolf Hitler or fascist or Soviet models, but upon the BBC, the British Broadcasting, from his own hometown. Norton said liberals do not even possess the one virtue of the most fanatics, and that's loyalty. The grief of the libs at the loss of their young champion, John Kennedy, did not extend to any dedication to uncover the truth about his death. As soon as the indicators pointed not to a lone assassin, but a well-organized conspiracy within the agencies of the federal government, including the FBI and the CIA, the liberals looked the other way. JFK could be mourned but not avenged. Too many apple cords would be upsetting the process. At the upper levels of the liberal establishment, there was a desperate effort, conscious and cynical, to cover up every trace of the conspiracy. Even before Kennedy's corpse had cooked, leading libs assured us the assassination was nothing more sinister than the act of a lone lunatic. They claimed the alleged murderers, the ones that were rubbed out in Dallas, were just a chance convergence. The fact that Jack Ruby got in and killed the lone assassin, Lee Harvey Oswald, was just a chance meeting of madmen. Eric Norton said that Earl Warren was the most egregious judicial fraud in recent history. He was trotted out to provide a convenient liberal fig leaf for the biggest cover-up since the investigation of Lincoln's murder. Within 1 year, his commission was made up of right-wing political hacks such as Hale Boggs, Dick Russell, and John Cooper, and also the princes of industry and commissions of right-wing agents such as Alan Dulles and John J. McCoy. He presented the public with a safe, prophylactic version of the assassination. The libs desired it, and they called it the Warren Report. Eric Norton said the Warren Commission report itself was an incredible melange of lies, half-truths, omissions, evasions, distortions. It is the ultimate testament to contemporary liberalism. As a matter of fact, the New York Times, that has always called the liberal press in America, manufactured and published the paperback version of the Warren Report, and they had another version. Louis Neiser wrote the introduction. The government put that out also, but the New York Times printed the paperback version. Eric Norton said, "This distortion fully deserves a place along with the Reichstag fires in the annals of political and judicial mythology." When this was published in The Realist in 1966, I don't think Eric Norton knew that a man named Otto Winnicker from Germany, and not by coincidence, related to the Reichstag fires, who's the head historian of the Pentagon in Washington, D.C., sent the authors to write the Warren Report. This is in the minutes of the Warren Commission meetings. It was published by David Lifton. It was in May. Before the commission had finished their work, they sent to the Pentagon to get Mr. Winnicker, the German, to write up the Warren Report. Eric Norton said there is little doubt that the upper level knew what was going on, and the little libs, on the other hand, bought and sold the official version simply because their whole political orientation had left them no other way out. Those who challenged the establishment were called extremists. They were told that they had an axe to grind. They were told they were paranoid and that they had a conspiratorial view of history. The handful of Americans and Europeans who challenged the official version of the assassination were hounded relentlessly by the establishment liberal watchdogs. Eric Norton wrote that in 1966, and you see the declassified memos today that the CIA had a concerted effort of authors, publishers, to smear the researchers going on since 1967. When he wrote this in 66, we were already being discredited, harassed, insulted, and called paranoid or having an axe to grind or the wrong view of history. Norton said the liberal credulity and intolerance are responsible today for the degree and fact that somewhere in America, President John Kennedy's assassins are walking the street. The bankruptcy of liberalism is more than just a political phenomenon. It is deeply rooted in the disease of the soul that has made America in the latter half of this 20th century the most brutal and immoral power in the world. And the only hope we have is an uncommitted force will change the root assumptions of the power structure and create a dynamic and principled opposition movement. What we saw in New York City was just a little smattering. It was like a state of siege. If you listen to the radio last Friday, and we're in New York on BAI from the towers, the Empire State Building, it was like a state of siege. But there's been a blackout of this siege in the newspapers because it wouldn't look right if the most liberal FM station in the United States were charged with being a conspiracy cover-up of the investigation going on in Washington, not allowing the news of Ted Gandolfo on the air, not allowing Mae Brussel on the air. But what we see is a few people still wanting to get to the truth, forcing the station off the air, telling them either to put up or shut up. So there is a little bit of life squeaking way across this nation, 4,000 miles away. There are people fighting for the truth, and for that I'm very grateful. And I know that the story of the phonies, whether they're FM stations or AM stations, is there. Eric Norton talked about it in 66. It hasn't changed, but the hypocrisy caught up with Bob Fass and Lindsay Auden and those various people back there. It caught up with them, and it forced them to lose their jobs and take them off the air and prove them to be the phonies that they are. Well, that's it for Dialogue Conspiracy. Next week, we'll get on to the murders in Hollywood of Mr. Prince and Mr. Finch, Freddie Prince, and I want to go into the murders of artists, musicians, and what's happening in Hollywood. I'll see you next week on Dialogue Conspiracy, and this is Mae Brussel from Carmel, California.
This has been Dialogue Conspiracy with political research specialist Mae Brussel, who for many years has been researching the facts behind political assassinations and conspiracies in this country. Dialogue Conspiracy originates with KLRB-FM, in Carmel, California.
This one?
Yeah.
Then that means everything's done, May.
Hey, I'll give you $6 for this. Is it okay?
That's fine.
Is that one there?
Oh, boy, that's fine.
I never carry cash. I got about 50 cents on me. I'd rather give you cash, but... going to Carmel, I never get in the bank if I go to the grocery store.
Money is money.
Is it okay?
Yeah, it's fine.
Okay.
Money is money.
Okay.
Public service is public service. Okay, here's one. Here's two.
And there's the bond. Oh, now I gotta go to the post office and mail the fuck. That's the one thing I hate about this station. Is it? No, I think there's a box over by the Safeway that picks up mail.
I think there's one over by the Safeway or one over by Monty Mart.
Monty Mart doesn't have a mailbox.
Does it?
No, it's over here by Rio.
Oh.
I'm gonna go over there. I think it's at 10 in the morning.
There are your tapes.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Let's see if I get my envelopes.
And set deck.
Okay. Now, Grant in New York got so used to the descent. I was saying this. I don't know whether to send the cassette.
Okay, I'll mail this big deal out to him.